We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. And I'd like to say thanks for tuning in for another episode. It's loyal viewers like you who make all of this possible. You and the even loyaler viewers who have a little bit of money to spare and choose to give it to me over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff, where you get extra nonsense and bonus bullshit for your tiny little bit of patronage. So last episode, you got a story about Australia's upcoming porn verification scheme. And before that, you can hear all about changes to Australia's fruit stickers, a series of fun and obscure stories that I have collected and told some bullshit about for your fun and entertainment. And if you'd like to hear some of those stories, feel free to join us at the Patreon. It's a good old time. Now, of course, I couldn't ask you to do this alone. Certainly not. Nor would I. That would be outrageous. So we're going to thank our largest sponsor for this episode, and today's major sponsor is Read a New Book Month. That's right. It's coming towards the end of September, but that doesn't mean that you don't have time to get on board with Read a New Book Month, because it is the entire month of September, so you should prepare for next year, because I know that you spend a lot of time scrolling on social media, so I'm going to give you a chance to do a bit of reading in between your outrage about the news and being outraged about TikTok takes and then being outraged about the news about TikTok takes, okay? We just need to break it up a little bit. We need just a little bit of reading in between to calm us down. Ever since the first written word appeared in roughly 3400 BC and the first story they told was the Epic of Gilgamesh, because I know you're curious. Turns out the second story ever told was the review of the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was said to be a little convoluted. The story didn't quite show the characters as the reader had imagined them when they'd heard the story in the oral tradition, and being written on clay tablets as it was made it terribly inconvenient to carry home from the Mesopotamian library. 2 stars. Mediocre read at best. And in this proud tradition, Read a New Book Month is a good time to read a new book. While there are still books around to be read, the mileage will vary depending on your local government. You can read whatever book you like for now, all the way from The Hungry Caterpillar up to Infinite Jest. But I think the fun way to do this would be to do it as like a group project. And for this project, we here at The Bearer of Weird News would like to suggest that we start with a book that we've all heard of, but none of us have actually read. No, not 1984. The Necronomicon. So let us begin.
Lo, he who opens his tome shall be granted knowledge beyond mortal comprehension. Recipes without a backstory about the writer's grandmother taking them on a family holiday when they were a little child. Tax tips that actually work, and how to politely end conversations at parties. Beware, for the margins are filled with eldritch doodles left by Year 9 students who borrowed it for an assignment in ancient Mesopotamia. Recite the sacred incantation. Renew online or face late fees for all eternity. Failure to return this book on time shall awaken the Ancient Ones, who will reorganize your bookshelves by author's first name. To summon the darkness, simply flip to chapter 13, or skip ahead to the crossword, which has never been solved.
If you'd like to continue to read after this point, you have a couple more days until the month is over. Or you can hold on to it, and we can start from the beginning next September. A very compelling beginning, I will tell you that. And it inspires me. It inspires me so much. So we here are also doing our own spin-off of Read a New Book Month. Something I'd like to get off the ground. something that we're calling buy a new book and leave it on your shelf, always claiming that you'll get around to reading it eventually month. And I think we can also do this one as a bit of a collective. It'll be a fun one. So if we could all go out before the end of the month, our first book for buy a new book and leave it on your shelf, always claiming that you'll get around to reading it, will be Infinite Jest. But of course, guys, of course, this would be even less possible without the existence of my live shows. So it is on that note that I have the following upcoming live shows. Mildura. Yes, that's right. Mildura will be there November 1st. So tickets are unavailable right now, so snatch them up while you can. And Canberra, I'll be coming to you on November 22nd as part of the Canberra Fringe Festival. Tickets haven't started selling yet, but they should early next month. So if you're interested, if you live in Mildura or in Canberra and you'd like to grab a ticket to my storytelling and stand-up show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, then those will be available either right now or very soon. I'll be bringing my brand new show around to festivals next year. I'm currently trying to lock in some spaces in both Melbourne and Adelaide Fringe and Comedy Festivals. So I'm very excited to bring a new show to you. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So do listen out for the details. I'll have those for you as I start locking things in the coming months. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's get into the headlines. Victoria's ban on machetes has brought into question the state's definition of a machete, which has raised questions over whether it is too broad. This has led to a growing use of what's being called the Paul Hogan defense. I do believe we have a clip of it being used in court right now.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
According to data obtained by the Herald Edinburgh, tram Scottish passengers have failed to tap off on more than 45,000 journeys in the past 2 months of a new contactless payment system. Said Melbourne tram passengers, wait a minute, you guys are touching on? Weird. That's not how we do trams here at all. They then offered them this encouragement. Look, this is definitely a good start, but we can really lift those numbers up to expert levels. If you'd like to take a course, come down to Melbourne. We'll teach you how it's done. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu released a video statement denying a massive conspiracy that had overtaken the online MAGA discourse, that Israel was behind the death of right-wing influencer Charlie Kirk. And frankly, it should have been obvious that Israel wasn't involved, because they only killed journalists and children. In Venice, a grassroots group of volunteers calling themselves the Not Distracted Citizens have been working to deter theft by filming suspects and warning passers-by. Now, some of the alleged pickpockets have filed lawsuits against the very citizens who caught them in action, sparking a debate about where civic duty ends and unlawful behaviour begins. I struggle to feel for these pickpockets, not because filming people in the street is irritating. It absolutely is. I understand that bit completely. But if they were really committed to the art, to the pickpocketing arts, they would have gone down the logical step and just pickpocketed the phones after these people had filmed them. Venice police have been very encouraging of these potential upcoming lawsuits and have announced that they would happily meet the pickpockets outside the courtroom to thank them for their vigilance. The first three aircraft in Qantas's new fleet will have one toilet for every 90 economy passengers, a worse economy passenger to toilet ratio than planes used by Scoot, Ryanair and Jetstar. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day where any airline would be able to out-cheap Jetstar. But here we go. You live long enough and you see enough things. If you ask me, that sounds a little bit shitty. It truly is a crap design. I'd say that they were taking the piss, but there aren't enough toilets to guarantee they could even do that. At this rate, their next planes will just have one bucket for all of economy, and if you pay an extra fee, maybe you'll get a shower curtain. If you don't pay enough of a fee, that shower curtain will probably be a clear shower curtain. US Republicans have told Australia, France, Canada, and the UK that recognising a Palestinian state would put them at odds with US interests. And they have come out to say the US will show unwavering support for Israel. And by unwavering support, they do mean that they will be sending ICE agents to Israel to teach Israeli soldiers how to better kick people out of a place that they definitely belong. They even offered to deport Palestinians to the El Salvadorian prisons just as a show of solidarity. However, despite the US being against Australia formally recognising Palestine, we did it anyway. And this is a staggering break from Australia's usual foreign policy, where we just blindly follow America into a foreign country that they want to bomb because they have a surplus of bombs that's about to reach their expiry date. Don't worry though, it's not a complete change. Don't get us wrong, we're still struggling. The coalition quickly rushed to clarify that they are still keen to lick boot and be on the wrong side of history by announcing they would reverse the recognition of Palestine if they ever got into power again. Because Susan Ley was determined to prove that being a woman didn't mean that she wasn't the same level of asshole that Liberal Party voters were used to supporting. And I think it's important to show your voters you know where they're at. Newly released documents revealed the details of FBI Director Kash Patel's secretive trip to New Zealand, including who he met, what he did, and the estimated cost to taxpayers. The documents released under the Official Information Act show Patel dined with New Zealand spy bosses Grimmer Wormtongue and Saruman the White at a US embassy dinner. Amid the fallout over the axing and reinstating of late-night talk show Jimmy Kimmel Live, Donald Trump said TV networks that air overly critical commentary of him aren't allowed to do so and should have their licenses taken away. Without even thinking, Jay Leno immediately offered to host a Trump administration-approved late-night show called Just Jokes About Monica Lewinsky Live. Opposition leader Susan Ley, who runs the party that famously wasted at least $20 billion on consultants, said Australians are too dependent on welfare and universal government subsidies. And I really have to give it to her. She would know. After all, she has had two investigations into her own use of government subsidies that caused her to resign in 2017. Sometimes you just have to bow to someone with real experience, you know? After turning down the gig, comedian and people's champion, Atsuko Okatsuka, revealed a few of the details of the offer that she was presented to appear at the Saudi Arabian Rider Comedy Festival, which ends October 9th. The details outlined content restrictions, which read, "Artists shall not prepare or perform any material that may be considered to degrade, defame, or bring into public disrepute, contempt, scandal, embarrassment, or ridicule the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, including its leadership, public figures, culture, or people, the Saudi royal family, legal system, or government, and any religion, religious tradition, religious figure, or religious practice." However, that didn't stop a bunch of American comedians from jumping on the gig and taking their blood money. To be fair, the American comedians that took the government-censored gig in Ryder Comedy Festival say they're just doing it as a practice gig, you know, a little bit of a warm-up for doing comedy in Trump's America. However, when asked about the hypocrisy of accepting a government-censored gig, cancel culture warrior comedians like Dave Chappelle said cancel culture only applies if someone isn't paying you to shut up. Now, to be fair, the Saudi Arabia-funded government-censored comedy festival is still only the second biggest bomb that that country has been responsible for. So, you know, you can't blame them for getting on board. That's it for the headlines this episode. Let's get into some of the bigger stories. It's first up, it's going to be Dodo News. Yes. de-extinction company Colossal Biosciences, the company who looked at Jurassic Park and asked the question, why the fuck shouldn't we? Who we've actually previously talked about their plan to bring back the Thylacine, dire wolves, and the woolly mammoth, for which they've raised, to date, $55 million. Because apparently, they just thought the part that was the issue in Jurassic Park was that they didn't spend enough money. And sure, John Hammond spends the entire film overcompensating for his underspending by overemphasizing that they've spared no expense. But that's not really what the issue was here, was it, guys? $55 million to resurrect the mammoth, the thylacine, and the dodo. This isn't science, it's necromancy with a PR department. For context, that's enough money to build a hospital, cure several diseases, or buy a single apartment in Sydney. And by that metric, you could argue it's a bargain. We have officially reached the point where it is cheaper to re-engineer an extinct animal than it is to own property in Australia. So we'd be fools not to de-extinct an animal that has no place in the natural order anymore. I hear by 2035, scientists estimate that the dodo will outnumber affordable homes in Australia. Just a little hot tip for you. We don't need a return of the mammoth. I can guarantee you that. I need a train that will arrive on time. One of these is achievable. Or, like, if we're getting ambitious, affordable housing? I mean, unless they plan on turning the mammoth into social housing. In which case, that's fine. We can build a herd of woolly mammoths as long as we, like, cut them open and people can live inside them like a tauntaun. And it's not that these are stories about irresponsible technological advancement or the unpredictable consequences of human hubris. No, no, no. Obviously, these are stories about Michael Crichton's crippling fear of theme parks. That's the only lesson we need to take from these major sci-fi stories, right? Now, Colossal scientists claim that they've made a pivotal step in bringing back the dodo for the first time in 300 years. They have succeeded in growing pigeon primordial germ cells, the precursor cells to sperm and eggs, and developed gene-edited chickens that will act as surrogates for the dodos, making them less an actual dodo and more some kind of like pigeon-chicken hybrid. I gotta say, $550 million so science can reinvent the McNugget does not feel like a good investment to me. Colossal even says that thousands of dodos could return within a decade, which, given the pace of global warming, means that they'll have about a fortnight to enjoy themselves before they go extinct again. And yes, it will be humanity's fault all over again. Climate change! How fun. The dodo was historically maligned as too stupid to survive. But I'll tell you this, we did that. We killed the dodo. But the resurrection of something that was perfect the first time and was ruined over time by interference actually makes the resurrection of the dodo the perfect mascot for the film industry in the 21st century. Capitalism killed the dodo the first time, now it's bringing it back as like a sort of fun side hustle. How good, how nice for us. Colossal isn't so much a science project as it is a Michael Crichton novel without the fun theme park element. They've raised $500 million to undo the consequences of capitalism with more capitalism. Sometimes fighting fire with fire isn't the right approach. Sometimes you need to fight fire with water, guys. That works as well. The original death of the dodo came about because of habitat loss and introduced invasive species such as macaws, pigs, and rats that raided dodo nests, killing them off. So we are at the very least going to need to edit some of the new dodos so that they have defensive qualities, you know, some spikes, some venom, or at least just like a sassy TikTok account where they go online and just talk shit about rats, pigs, and macaws. The dodo went extinct 300 years ago. Reintegrating them into modern society might prove complicated because the world has changed a lot in 300 years. Can you imagine being dead for 300 years only to be brought back into a world with TikTok, climate collapse, and Elon Musk? That's not reincarnation. That's cruel and unusual punishment. Celebrity investors such as Paris Hilton and Tiger Woods have flocked to the business, presumably in the hopes that Colossal Biosciences, once successful, can use the technology to bring back their careers from extinction. If they really want to bring back something that humanity has killed that might actually be useful, they can get to work on bringing back a functioning working class. Although, to be fair, the working class also has a habitat problem. We call them landlords. I'll tell you this much though, this is a little secret that we managed to dig up. They actually have Jimmy Barnes' DNA on ice in the event that we need to bring back the working class after working them to death. Oh, they are working class men. Besides, the super rich are going to need an underclass to overlord when they come out of their doomsday bunkers, right? We can't just do all the work themselves. That would defeat the purpose of going into the bunker. Moving on now, it is koala news. Koalas are Australia's cute international mascot, our biggest source of global soft power outside of exporting Hemsworths. Koalas are what happens when evolution puts all of its points into adorable and forgets to invest in able to eat more than one type of food. See, the problem with koalas is when people see them up close for the first time and they make that koala growl, you know the one, it freaks people out. I'd play it for you now, but I don't want to ruin the surprise. Hearing that growl is like the Australian version of going to a Nordic country and eating pickled herring. It's something you need to experience firsthand. Biologists call it a bellow, which is misleading because it sounds less like a bellow and more like a small motorbike trying to climb out of hell. You really do need to experience it for yourself. Something you may have heard about koalas is that lots of them famously have chlamydia. It's so rampant, some surveys have shown that some wild populations demonstrate a 100% rate of infection because koalas fuck. Which makes them a great international mascot for us, because going overseas, that's all Australians try to do as well. I mean, 100% chlamydia infection rate, that's not a wildlife statistic, that's a Love Island casting call. Which is a tragedy because, unlike Love Island contestants, koalas can't sell vitamins on Instagram afterwards in order to maintain their career. And honestly, I mean, they're going to need to do something like that. Because, you see, when your life cycle is dependent on your first meal being the mushed up poop from one of your parents, well, that sort of thing stays with you forever. Of course, you spend the rest of your life looking for a way to forget about it, and losing yourself in drugs and rampant sex is definitely a way to suppress some of those thoughts. And I guess that's why chlamydia is so rampant among certain populations. It's one of the leading causes of koala death. So koalas are fucking themselves to death, which makes koalas the anti-panda. Pandas refuse to fuck so much that it's killing them. Koalas refuse to stop fucking despite the fact that it's killing them. And it's because of this hedonistic lifestyle that we have to step in and help them by developing the world's first vaccine for chlamydia in koalas, developed over more than a decade, which may help to prove useful as a blueprint for human use. Because of course, we can't just do things to be nice. We have to get something out of it as well. Don't you know how nature works? We take, we take, we take, and then when we're forced to, we give a little bit back. Researchers at the University of the Sunshine Coast are developing this single-use vaccine for chlamydia in koalas. Because of course they are. It's the Gold Coast. That's the home of schoolies. People aged 15 to 29 account for 67% of all chlamydia infections and 50% of all gonorrhea infections in Australia. Schoolies is just an STI exchange. It's like playing Pokemon Go if the Pokemon were STIs. Ooh, you've got herpes? I haven't got that one yet. Let me just remove this condom and we're gonna try catch them all! Let's look, keep an eye out though for the shiny ones. I hear those ones are particularly dangerous. Low key, I do think that we have spent the better part of the last decade attempting to cure koala chlamydia, not because we're trying to help ourselves, but strictly out of guilt. You see, while chlamydia is one of the main threats to the koala population, it comes after vehicle strikes and habitat loss. Habitat loss, the main drivers of which were agriculture, followed by native forest logging, and in third place, you guessed it, coal mine approvals. It's gotten so bad, the koala was officially listed as an endangered species in 2022, with the ongoing loss of habitat being the main reason. So the koalas aren't the only ones fucking the koalas to death. We've had a hand in that, a knuckle-deep hand, and a strap-on belt with a chainsaw attachment. We've turned habitat destruction into a sex act so niche, it should come with its own OnlyFans category. So we aren't doing a very good job of looking after the koala. We've already driven the Tasmanian tiger and the drop bear to extinction. We need to make sure that we are able to continue to destroy their habitat so that we can sell it to mining companies while preserving koala numbers. Hence, we need the vaccine. We need to eliminate one of these major causes of death, and we're certainly not stopping logging or mining anytime soon. So we make them a vaccine, we let them party carefree until we've cleaned up all of their livable habitat. And you better believe we're doing an excellent job of that, because this year alone, despite the koala status as endangered, 2025 has been the worst year on record for federal approval of the destruction of koala habitat. Yeah, it's so bad that even caramella koalas have been shrinking over the last decade. Plus, when was the last time you saw Blinky Bill, huh? Where is he? What happened to him? Somebody knocked down his home. Koalas are so rare that we had to make Blue Healers our international representative in the form of Bluey, because at least they'll still be around after 2050. People won't be watching koalery and going, hey, what's that creature? I've never seen it before. It's officially the worst year on record for federally permitted clearing of koala habitat, as the Albanese government has approved the destruction of 4,000 hectares of koala habitat, the equivalent of 4 Sydney airports. 4 Sydney airports! I've been to Sydney airports, it's very shit. Sydney Airport is already a habitat where dreams go to die. Why do we need to replicate this 4 times over with koalas? On the bright side though, as some of this habitat destruction is from a proposal for a multi-million dollar expansion of Dreamworld on the Gold Coast, which is of course just another reason the University of the Gold Coast needs to be the one to develop the chlamydia vaccine. By 2050, koalas are only going to exist in two places, Dreamworld and on your aunt's tea towel collection. We'll just have to turn a large section of this former natural koala habitat into an expansion of Dreamworld's wild with Australian Geographic, which will be the largest, last and only simulated koala habitat where the remaining koalas can live and be accessed for chlamydia-free photos on a daily basis. And only for the low chlamydia-free price of $100 a photo. A bargain, really, to see one of the last koalas in existence. Imagine being able to tell your grandchild that you held a fluffy koala in your hands before they all died out. Memories, what a beautiful memory. And if they do end up all dying out after all the hard-earned dollars that they earned for Dreamworld, well, we can just pay some scientists even more money to bring them back using cloning and gene editing. We can even make them better, more user-friendly koalas that don't need a vaccine to not get STIs, because they'll even come in a range of colours and flavours. But once we get to that point, you need to help preserve these new and improved koalas by joining a subscription service, something like Koala Plus. And finally, my friends, finally we have reached Nepal news. We don't often think about Nepal here in the West unless we're planning to go full Edmund Hillary and claim that we climbed to the top of Everest without the help of a local Sherpa. Everest at this point is basically the Disneyland of mountains. You queue for hours, you get ripped off by concessions, and the lucky ones die halfway. So the world, it's fair to say, was collectively surprised when Nepal suddenly gave us the sort of political drama we usually see in a Netflix documentary or a university lecture about the collapse of 17th century empires, if you follow my meaning. Nepal's deadliest outbreak of political violence in decades, as a group of mostly Gen Z protesters took to the streets of Kathmandu and other cities, prompted over widespread allegations of corruption and sparked by a social media ban. Because a good mob is like watching The Wire. It takes a while to get going, but once you're into it, you're never going to turn back. Now, you are right to be a bit hesitant in picking a side when you hear about citizens storming some form of capital in recent years. It hasn't exactly always turned out that they had the best interests of that country at heart. And I know when you hear mob in the capital, your knee-jerk reaction is cautious at best. There's been a glut of revolutions recently, and sometimes the people in the streets are exactly the sort of people who would be keen to hang a do not resuscitate sign on their local democracy. But the weird part is, these guys, they're actually fighting to make the country better. Shock horror, I know. Yeah, you heard right. There was an angry mob, and don't get me wrong, it was trying to overthrow the government, but it was trying to overthrow a corrupt government. Which, if you're keeping score at home, makes it a revolution rather than a very determined spring cleaning attempt. This is so rare. It's really given late 18th century France energy. Seems in the French Revolution we did class action so well that we decided that we'd nailed it. But I guess it's only revolution when it comes from the late 18th century region of France. Otherwise, it's just simply called sparkling chaos. What they call woke nonsense and ungrateful disobedience in certain news circles. And occasionally Latin America would flare up with a bad case of sparkling chaos, but they would quickly put them back down, unfortunately. Mostly when we are seeing countries recreate the second best Captain America film, we see it in the background of some form of influencer video. And this hasn't exactly changed this time around.
This is not for social media, this is for corruption.
Yes,
not
I know, I've heard. Yeah. For the kids that were flaunting like, their wealth or something.
Because people are saying this is for social media, no. Yeah. This is for like corruption.
Yeah.
Because our like child, like our brother and sister, like 17, 18, they just died.
Yeah, they've just been shot.
They're murdered.
Yeah, I know.
The sparkling chaos, the ungrateful disobedience might not be televised, but it will get you a lot of views. It might even get you elevated to the monetization program. Or if you stream the wrong revolution, I guess it'll get you demonetized. So it's up to you which one you stream. Now, as that young man alluded to, the protest took place after the government banned social media. They claimed that this was because the companies had not registered in the country. The registration requirement had been motivated in part as a way to enable the enforcement of a new digital service tax and the stricter value-added tax rules on foreign e-service providers in an effort to boost revenue. However, critics allege the shutdown was prompted by something else.
In Nepal, a generation fed up with corruption and inequality turned to social media, sharing viral posts under hashtags like NepoKids that exposed political privilege. But when the government tried to silence them by blocking Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube and other major platforms, Gen Z did not back down.
Ah yes! Nepotism! The official national pastime of way too many democracies. Why are we attacking Nepo babies? I don't understand. Sure, it wasn't the best Muppets spin-off, but it's definitely more fun than the 2020s Muppets Now, right? That was a terrible spin-off of the Muppets, and I'm just... What's that? Oh! Nepo babies! Sorry, not Muppet babies. That's not the same thing at all. That was very embarrassing. But I stand by what I said about Muppets Now. It was a terrible spin-off. That being said, I think we're due for a new Muppets attempt. Maybe we get one of those going. Anyway, I don't see why a social media trend highlighting nepotism, focusing on the undue privileges enjoyed by the children and relatives of influential political leaders, would have prompted the ruling government to completely shut down social media channels under the guise of non-compliance. That doesn't make sense to me. Could be worse. They could be forcing citizens to upload their government ID or their literal face on the internet to access certain websites. I get it, you know. You spend 360 years telling everybody that they need to respect the people who only get into power because they were related to the current batch of people who were in power. And for no other reason. But hey, that's a completely normal thing. That's the way many countries run, right? So when you've operated like that for so long, people just sort of expect that that's the best way to run. But however, when their royal reign ended in 2008, the same year that Paris Hilton had just been cast in a musical despite her demonstrated lack of ability to sing or act, Keeping Up with the Kardashians would start their relentless pursuit of taking up every screen at all at once at any possible time that they could, and Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop had only just started to dream of creating a vagina-scented candle or putting a jade egg in the yonis of women the world over. It did seem like the golden age of Nepo babies would be going ahead unimpeded and overpraised. No wonder that they thought nobody would question it if they don't have to earn their jobs in government. Makes sense. The government's decision to ban social media platforms served as the immediate catalyst to the unrest. Because nothing says, we're definitely not corrupt, like banning people from pointing out that you're corrupt. You know, people say that slacktivism and hashtags never get anything done, but when your leaders are so thin-skinned that the mere act of criticizing them means that they will then go out of their way to ban platforms that host criticism of them or outspoken critics, then you force us to take the next step. That's like responding to bad Yelp reviews by burning down the entire internet. Seems disproportionate. Yeah, you stopped the hashtags, but you created actual mobs. Congratulations, you invented the world's worst trade-off. You could have just had a bunch of useless hashtags and people complaining online, and maybe even marching in the streets, and it would have remained the kind of thing that feels good but changes nothing. Like weekly marches to try and get the Western governments to sanction Israel. A beautiful idea mired by complete ineffectualness. But then you had to go and have a cry, didn't you? Throw a big old tantrum and take away the one thing that made them feel like they were doing something. If they'd have had social media in the 60s, the summer of love would have been the hashtag of love, and we'd all be wondering why nothing changed. But you overreached, didn't you? They always overreach. And with all social media shut down, surely there would be nowhere for these kids to gather, he asked in a leading and knowing manner.
Gen Z did not back down. Instead, they got creative, switching to platforms like BitChat and Discord to organize rallies, hold live stream debates, vote on an interim prime minister, and keep their movement alive offline and online.
They were using Discord. Discord. The platform invented so lonely men could coordinate night raids in video games has now turned into the tool that coordinated daylight riots in real life. A Discord coup. Fuck. That's like if democracy was saved by your nephew's Fortnite squad. Only in 2025 could the downfall of a government begin with the words, "Press F to pay respects" in the chat. Don't get me wrong, I love this. I do, absolutely. But I want to note that Discord was originally a platform for gamers to chat. And having a gaming platform as the savior of democracy is like having a sovereign citizen prepper save democracy. You know? they're not the expected hero of this scenario. Like, I'm absolutely glad it happened, but I'd never have been the one to turn to them in the first place to save us. And I can hear your grandpa saying, "Oh, these kids can't do anything without social media. They can't even hold a coup. Back in my day, we mobilized in the streets, and you actually had to talk to people to know what was going on." And to that we say, "This is why you took so long to do everything, you old fuck. The world has changed. This is a generation for whom digital services are central, not only to communication, identity, and political expression, but also to education and economic opportunities. There has been such rampant corruption in the upper echelons, people had to create their own economic opportunities. Social media platforms drove roughly 80% of total online traffic in Nepal and serve as vital channels for businesses and communication. After platforms got banned, people used VPNs to access those banned platforms and issued calls to action that reached tens of thousands of young people. Those actions were so vital that the kids of Nepal overturned the government in only 5 days, in, out, bada bing, bada boom, no fucking around. 5 days is very impressive. The US spent 20 years in Afghanistan, and all they toppled was their own reputation. They even used the Discord platform to hold their election, and boy, it has to be the most online thing that has ever happened. Can we take a look, please?
A single server on Discord named Youth Against Corruption drew over 100,000 participants and became the heart of the movement. The server hosted a debate on Nepal's next interim prime minister, which was also streamed live on national TV and other digital platforms.
I mean, look at that. Just look at it. It's going to be the first time that an election has included emojis and GIFs as part of their official political discourse. And the poop one was actually legally binding. I would say there's maybe one exception, and that is Australian donkey voting, of course. Because sometimes you hit on a thing early, but it takes someone else to just escalate it to the logical conclusion, just really take it to the next level. And you know, that even though the election was broadcast on TV, there was somebody who was definitely not included in that group chat. That's how group chats work, right? There's always a second group chat about the group chat. And if you don't know about the second group chat, that's because they want to talk about you, my friend, and I'm very sorry. I guess in this case, it was like former Prime Minister KP Sharma Oli who was left out of the group chat, because they were definitely talking about them. The protest centered around anger and the corruption that's so prevalent in Nepalese parliament, which has been simmering for decades just under the surface, and has seen Nepal ranked 107 out of 180 countries in Transparency International's latest corruption percentage index. And I don't know if I have a lot of numerologists in my audience, in the listeners, but I did extensive research into this, and I can confidently tell you that number is quite low on that list. 107 out of 180? Woo! Really low. And because I know that we can't go more than 5 minutes without referencing ourselves, yes, I did look. Australia is ranked 10 on the list. Okay, you happy now? We talked about us. Let's get back to the story. This group was such a perpetually online bunch of nerds that their leader was actually a former DJ. And at this point, why not, eh? In a world where so much politics is a performance, the person who used to read the room for music now reads the room for anger. At least the DJ knows how to drop something other than bombs. And their symbol of resistance is the One Piece pirate flag. The Straw Hat Jolly Roger. Look at that bad boy. Look at him. Now, if you've never heard of One Piece because you were busy being the president of cool guys and having so much sex in high school club, or just didn't want to commit to it because as of right now, there are over 1,000 episodes. You understand how big of a commitment that is? 1,000 episodes of anything. Even The Simpsons hasn't hit 1,000 episodes yet. And there's something, I think, quietly beautiful about a movement led by a DJ and waved along by pirate flags. Like, it's global youth culture saying, we will meme your corruption into obsolescence. So now, we have a model. A handful of young people, tech native, creative, and morally furious, who use modern tools to make a very old demand. Accountability. Non-negotiable. They did it in 5 days. No wonder they had to use Discord. That wasn't a protest. That was a speed run of a revolution. They had to give each other tips on how to best get through the speed run, you know? You should know the cartoonish skull on the black banner has increasingly become a protest icon in parts of Asia. It's not just in Nepal. It was first used in Indonesian trucker protests, which actually makes a lot of sense to me, because these guys are spending hours alone on the road. 1,000 episodes of anything isn't daunting to someone who's facing a 12-hour drive. That's just finally meeting somebody who can keep up with you. Then it spread to protests in Nepal, the Philippines, and France has even started adopting the flag as a symbol of freedom, defiance, and a growing movement against corruption, as youth resistance against injustice and authoritarianism. It's spreading, guys. It's very exciting. There isn't a single Western cartoon that I can think of that would have a similar capacity to light a fire under the asses of the general population. Actually, sorry, no. There is one. I take that back. A cartoon of such singular importance. Love for it has been passed down from generation to generation. It has spawned endless seasons and remakes. A show that has never showed violence in any form except the overturning of corruption. I'd go so far as to say it inspired the entire true crime genre. And that show? Scooby-Doo! Roro! That's right, Raggy. From day one, Scooby-Doo was all about showing the youth that most of the world's issues were caused by corrupt capitalists. The problems were solved by precocious and dope-smoking youth who travelled the countryside in a van because even in the 60s, nobody could afford to pay rent. They let the next generation know the truth, that monsters don't exist. They are just the lies that those in power use to cover up their own crimes. We need a flag here in the West that we can unite under, something that we've seen, something that we understand, that we can believe in, and has always had our best interests at heart. The Mystery Machine. If I see another protest going through the city, be it an attempt to free Palestine, to fight civil rights, or simply because they are shutting down your favourite bubble tea place, and there isn't a Mystery Machine flag proudly flying in the centre of that march, I will consider it all for nothing, and we will have to burn it all down and start over. Fortunately, climate change has, for most of us, covered that for a good majority of the near future. And we already know that they are cracking down on climate protests, so we won't expect to see another one of those with a Mystery Machine flag in our lifetime. So I think it's a perfect time to sort of blend all these ideas together. Thank you so much for hanging around and coming all the way to the end of the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it sparked some sort of inspiration under you and that you're going to go out and make yourself a Mystery Machine flag to fly at your next protest. I really do appreciate you guys, your time. And if you think you know somebody who would enjoy this podcast, the ideas or the stories, do feel free to share it around to anybody who you think would be into it. And feel free to join up to the Patreon. As I said, Matt Harvey Stuff. Patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff. Fucked that up, didn't I? And come out to the live shows. Please come out to the live shows. I really do enjoy when you guys pop out. It's a good old time, and I look forward to seeing you out there in the world. Thank you so much. Look after yourselves, my friends. Goodbye.